You guys think it's something else, but it's really the fishing zone. This is Fishing Frank, and I got Robert in a chair across from me. I gotta tell you, it's been one heck of a show. We got a good show for you today. We're gonna be talking all about how to go fishing on the pier today, getting ready to go pier fishing, what to do, all the rest of that stuff. Kind of an all-inclusive pier fishing thing. Now, keep in mind, we're on WKDW Radio, 97.5 FM out of Northport, Florida, real community radio. And from Venice all the way down into Port Charlotte, Englewood, you can catch us all over the place, 97.5. And you can find it at kdwradio.com. So anyway, let's get to the program. So anyway, hey, Robert.
Hi, Frank.
Yeah, I can't believe I actually almost got that. And you wouldn't believe what we've been going through to try and get all this together. We're talking about pier fishing this morning, or this afternoon, rather, this afternoon. I don't know what time it is. It's morning somewhere, 5 o'clock someplace. Pier fishing is a lot different than going out in a boat. I mean, actually, you need bigger tackle on a pier. I think people have a tendency to say, I'm just going to the pier, you know, and, you know, what's the difference? You know, I'm just going to the pier.
Yeah. But
now, is that a good statement, or is it like, it's different? Because to me, I don't think you can start a pier up and follow the fish. I've never found the start button for the pier to get the motor going so I can chase a fish. Now, my boat, I can chase them around. So I use smaller tackle on my boat than I would on a pier. How about you?
Absolutely. I would agree with that. You know, you got to be able to muscle the fish away from the structure while you're standing on the structure versus with a boat, you're away from the structure. So pulling him out is usually a little bit easier.
Well, I don't have any structure with the boat. I mean, unless I'm fishing up against structure. But let's say I got a big fish on in the boat. He starts taking all my line. I turn the key, fire the boat up, and I can do 60 miles an hour in my boat. He's not getting away.
Right.
Most piers go not quite that fast.
No.
So if I'm going to fish for fish off a pier, I'm going to use much larger tackle, heavier rods, than I would in a boat. And that's exactly opposite of what most people think. Now, let's go over just for a second. I want to talk about licensing, the state license requirement. Now, there are a couple of exceptions if you need a license or don't need a license, but the basic rule would be you need a license.
Correct. No matter what, you need a license, resident, non-resident, over the age of 65. The only exception to that is under the age of 16.
All right, so if you're 15 or younger, you don't need a fishing license anywhere in Florida.
Correct.
Now, if you're a resident of Florida, 65 years old, you can get your driver's license is your fishing license. But it has to be a Florida driver's license. Can't be Michigan, Georgia, anywhere else. It's got to be a Florida driver's license. If you're from out of state, you need a fishing license, theoretically, to look at the water, really.
For everything across the board, freshwater, saltwater. Yeah,
there's no place you can fish in Florida without buying a license directly or indirectly. Now, some piers have a license they pay for. It's like $800, $1,200 a year they pay. And that way, you go on that pier, you don't need a license. But those are usually piers you have to pay for to get onto. There's no county piers that are covered under that rule. They're all private piers. Sharky's might be one of those. I don't know if Sharky's is or not.
Sharky's is. Sharky's does pay for their own licensing.
So, and there's one on the north end of Boquilla you can go down to and fish on the north end of Pine Island in Boquilla. We have that one on the website. Now, outside of places like that, none of the piers, if you walk up to a county pier and you're from out of state, you need a license to fish on it. 3 days is $17.50, a week is $30.50, and a year is $47.50. But if you're a resident of Florida, you can get a free shoreline license. It's good for saltwater only. Freshwater, you still need to buy a license. So if you're going out in freshwater, you have to have the license. But we're talking about saltwater today. In saltwater, you can get a shoreline license at no charge from most bait shops or on the state website or call-in numbers and stuff like that.
Right. And but you do have to still obtain one, even though it's free, because a lot of people are under the misconception that because it's free, they don't have to worry about it. You still actually have to obtain a license. And that was their way of avoiding from what us getting charged by the federal government, taking a little bit of piece of the pie for saltwater fishing. Isn't that kind of what it was about?
Yeah, the feds came up with this idea of a federal fishing license, which would have been $12 or $15 a year, and the state would have got virtually no money from it, like a dollar a license.
Right.
Now, I know as an agent, we sell fishing licenses. We get 50 cents for every fishing license we sell. 50 cents to us, there's the $17.50. That's our part. Then the county gets a buck and a half, and then I don't know what the company gets that actually does the website, because it's not the state. That's a private contractor.
Right.
So that contractor gets some money from this, and then the state gets what's left. But anyway, so the basic rules is, that was a long boiled down thing, that if you're from out of state, you need a license no matter where you are. If you're a resident of Florida, Florida driver's license, ID, whatever, you can get a free license to fish a saltwater pier. If you're going to go out in a boat or whatever, it's $17.50 a year. Now, the free license does not cover snook. That's under a separate permit, and it's $10.50 nowadays.
Correct.
It's a lot of money. All right. If you're going to go out in a pier, I think you got to kind of get ready at the house thinking about what you're going to do. And you really want to kind of get an idea of what fish are out there. If you're going after sharks, you need great big tackle. If you're going after like sheephead, a much different tackle. Now, this time of year, I would say your basic fish off of the piers is going to be trout, sheephead, possibly snook. Spanish mackerel,
redfish, maybe
possible,
maybe
redfish,
maybe flounder, maybe pompano. Definitely always probability of some whiting.
So what I'm going to be looking for is like a 10 to 20 pound class 7 foot spinning rod, or maybe even a 7.5 or an 8. Now, the longer rod is actually going to be a little more helpful, because A, you can cast farther, or B, it holds the fish out further away from the pilings that you're standing on.
Right.
So a longer rod on the pier is beneficial. The shorter the rod, the harder it is to keep them away from the pilings. And so a longer rod is much more helpful. Let's say at this time of year, what I'm going to be thinking of, sheephead rod, I want a 10 to 20, a 3,000 or 4,000 reel. Now, is braid or mono better for you?
Honestly, for fishing off of a pier, I'm probably going to go with monofilament more so than the braid. Just because of the abrasion resistance. I mean, it's a wives' tale that braid is more abrasion resistant than monofilament. And because I'm fishing or have a chance of that fish going around those pilings or right next to that structure as I'm bringing them in, I want something that's going to potentially have
now,
a little...
I think mono's better for abrasion under a load, but braid is better just for wrapping around. I don't, you know, but once you put a lot of tension to it, the braid cuts easier.
Correct.
But if it's a little slack, the braided, if it's brushing against the mangroves, I think, to me, would be a little more resistant. But I would probably go along with you on the mono for a different reason. It's still more invisible.
Absolutely.
So if you're using monofilament, tying a leader on, freelining a bait out with a fluorocarbon leader, that's pretty much one of the sneakiest ways to fish.
Without a doubt.
Hide your hook in the bait, and you've got pretty close to a natural presentation as you can get. But... now, if you're using braided, and I'm going straight down for sheephead, let's dig into sheephead for a minute. I'm going to use a three-way swivel, or I'm going to tie loop knots. I'm going to put my line down to a leader, and I'm going to have about a three-foot leader or more, three and a half foot leader. You can't reel it all up in your rod because it stops right up there.
Right.
But with the line tied to the top and a sinker on the bottom, and then off of that, either using three-way swivels or loop knots to let my bait come out. My first one's going to be about a foot off the bottom. Then when it dangles down a little bit, and I'm using a heavy weight, 1, 2, 3 ounces of lead, because I want to fish it on the side of the pier where the tide is coming from. I want it my bait to drop down and the bait to come towards the piling. Because the sheephead are going to be around the piling. Now, I don't really think of them as a bottom fish. even though a lot of people do. I think they kind of go up and down the pilings.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're feeding on all those little crustaceans and barnacles and stuff.
So what I'm looking for is my one that's about a foot above the sinker is going to be kind of close to the bottom. And then I've got another one a foot and a half up from that coming out anywhere from 6 to 10 inches away from the main line. And I'm using that heavy sinker so the tide doesn't grab my line and drag it into the pilings.
Right.
So I've got that heavy sinker out there, putting my rod over the end and dropping it down, letting it hit the bottom. And then I've got to hold tension on this, because if you let the line go slack, all your bait falls to the bottom, laying on the bottom.
Or it gets pulled into the pilings.
So the big thing is you've got to hold this upright. Keep it up. And I'm going to fish off to the side of myself a little bit so that I can judge where my sinker and my line is in relationship, because I've got my line tied to a leader going down to the sinker at the bottom, and then above that I've got two baits coming off, or even three. But if I'm holding it straight out in front of me, I can't really get it in closer. So I'm going to step off to the side of the piling, drop it down, and try and get those baits so they're almost really touching the piling, where the sheephead are more likely to see them. Now, you can use a barnacle for this.
Uh-huh.
A piece of peeled shrimp meat.
Mm-hmm.
Fiddler crabs, mangrove crabs.
Sand fleas.
Sand fleas, another good bait.
One we found that's worked probably all along, but just starting to gain popularity, because artificials are never a real popular one with the sheep's head, is the fish bites. The fish bites in that bloodworm or the shrimp.
And I like the bloodworm. Sheephead really seem to go for that bloodworm flavor. And
yeah.
You get it in the little triangles or the strips. I'll put it on the hook, and then I'll try and put like maybe even a piece of peeled shrimp meat. I take the shell off just like I would if I was going to eat it. Cut a piece big enough to hide the hook. But the meat's so soft when the sheephead bites, you'll get on the hook.
Correct.
Now, one of the things about it is, I've said I'm dropping it down, and it's about a foot or so away from the pier, however long the leaders are I made, and the bait's dangling out towards the piling. If you get a hit, you're going to try and swing that back in front of you to get that fish away from the piling. It's another reason I kind of like being over to the side, because I can swing my rod out as I'm lifting it up. So it's getting the hook plus moving the fish away from that piling.
That's true.
So these are things that I kind of like to do sheephead fishing. Now, if I was going to do, let's say Spanish mackerel off a pier. Now, with the sheephead, I'm going down, not fishing really on the bottom, not up towards the top, just that 1 to 3 feet off the bottom. What do you do with Spanish mackerel?
With Spanish mackerel, generally you're casting out away from the pier, and usually I'm going to cast with the tide personally for them.
Now, why would the sheephead be right up there, but you're casting away for the Spanish mackerel?
Because the sheep's head are definitely going to be around on that structure, feeding on the little crustaceans, versus a Spanish mackerel is more of an open water fish. Well, it's totally an open water fish. It's a pelagic fish, and it prefers to feed on shrimp and fish in the open water, especially if it can find schools of bait fish to slash at, because it's kind of a slash and cut type fish, and comes back and eats your bait back up.
Well, I would think the other reason is they don't want to get too close to the pier, because most often some of the biggest fish around that would eat a Spanish mackerel are laying under the pier.
Yeah, they're part of the food chain.
Yeah, they come too close to that pier, they might dart in to get a bait and get back out of there. They're pretty gutsy little mackerel to come up under a pier, because any of the piers are liable to have Goliath grouper, big snook, redfish. I mean, there's no telling what's underneath some of those piers.
There's some pretty sizable fish.
So that mackerel could be lunch going to find his lunch.
Yep.
So they like that open water where they can dart, because they're very quick and they can get away from their predators as long as they're in the open. So now, I fish them primarily, I like using a popping cork. I like making some noise where my bait is.
Yeah, no, that's a very, very good technique. Me personally, I'm a little bit different. I usually just am casting a spoon sometimes under.
A little bit different?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'll let you go on that one, but it's okay. Go ahead.
You know, sometimes I'm actually casting the spoon by itself, and other times I'm actually using a water-fillable bobber. Just give me a little bit of weight and get it out there just a tad bit farther at times.
Well, I think one of the best lures ever made for Spanish mackerel is the Ott Clark squid spoon. The
yep.
squid spoon from Clark, and it's an Ott. It's such a tiny little spoon, but it weighs nothing.
Yeah.
And it works so good, the Ott or the double Ott, but that's a zero or double zero. We're speaking Jethro Bodine terms here. But with that Ott spoon, it doesn't weigh enough to cast it, so we use a water-fillable casting bubble and put it on before the leader, fill it with water because in the air it's very heavy. But as soon as it hits the water, it's just plastic full of water, so it doesn't sink any more than anything else.
Yeah.
It becomes very neutral. And that's what Robert's talking about, a water-fillable casting bubble, very popular out west where you have a lot of fly fishing because you can put a fly leader on there, a little tiny dry fly, cast that bubble out, leave a little bit of air in it, don't fill it completely full of water, gives you a very heavy cast, and then when it hits the water, it floats up a little bit, brings your fly right across the surface, or even a wet fly, you can fill it with water, allows you to stand on the edge of a lake where you have a heavy tree cover in the back and cast those very light nothing out in the open water. And we've turned that into a saltwater technique.
Yes.
So now my favorite lure for Spanish mackerel is the Gotcha.
Yeah, Gotcha. It's honestly probably one of the main reasons why I got my job here. You know, I came in to buy one, and it was strictly for that, just going out to play with Spanish mackerel. You know, it's a super simple lure. It casts a mile, relatively inexpensive, but
$3 to $5 depending.
You got so many colors and sizes of them, and can be versatile. You can work them slow, fast. It's
yeah, originally, now like some of the other lures that we'll talk about during the program, the Gotcha was originally a head and jerk jigger, and it came out in a smaller design first, and it was in for the Great Lakes for vertical jigging for walleye and several other freshwater species. And like a lot of lures, somebody brought it down and found out it's great on mackerel. But down here, we cast them out and start reeling it in at a moderate retrieve, and then lifting your rod tip really quick and high, making it dart up in the water and then fall back down, dart up in the water and fall back down. Now you have to lift your rod tip as you're jigging it to get this effect. If you're sweeping your rod to the side, it's more of a darting action. It's not going to be that crazy for the mackerel. You need to have that up and down action with the Gotcha. And I just think it's funny. I love history and, you know, finding out that it really was a freshwater lure that somebody just found out, wow, this is great. I'm a purist, though. I like the old redhead silver. That's still my favorite.
Yeah, mine too.
But they come in so many different colors nowadays. And it's just kind of a hard metal head with a kind of a cut on it to give it kind of a lip with a swimming action, and then a solid tube body with two hooks on it. And it's easy, simple, and I guess the KISS method still applies. Keep it simple, stupid. It works.
Yeah, absolutely.
But now, let's say, we're gonna save a couple of these fish for the a little bit later, but I'm thinking we did sheephead and Spanish mackerel. Now, sea trout, what, that's a very common one from the piers is sea trout.
Right.
They seem to come up like mackerel. They stay away from the pier because, again, they're going to be food if they get too close.
Absolutely.
They want to come in and get something and get right back out. So they're good cast away from the pier. What's your favorite sea trout method?
Honestly, I mix it up so much, I don't really have a favorite one because there's so many different ways to fish for those guys. I mean, probably one of the most popular ones off of any of the piers is actually a popping cork like you were talking about earlier. You know, popping cork, 2 to 3 feet roughly of leader underneath the popping cork, and a shrimp with just a little split shot above my hook.
Now, why do you put the split shot above the hook?
Because a lot of the piers that you fish off, the current's ripping pretty good at times, and that shrimp wants to float right up to the surface. So with that little tiny split shot on, helps hold them under the surface just a little bit more in conjunction with your bobber working with you.
Now, I use the split shot for that reason, but also I've had several times where I've watched my shrimp jumping around out of the water to get away from the fish I'm trying to catch.
And then you get a tangled mess because he hops over your bobber five or six times.
So I'm using that split shot to actually keep my shrimp down where the fish can get them. Now, the one pier, and this might be a trick for some of the other piers, at Lashley Park down here right off Punta Gorda, what I do is I'm using 4 to 5 feet of line under the popping cork. Vinny showed me that years ago. It's very effective. I use a little heavier split shot, put about 5 feet of line down, go up about a foot, and put about a number 5 split shot on to keep your shrimp down there. And what's weird is the popping still works.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm using a popping cork, but I'm not trying to cast it. I got too much line. I literally drop it off the side of the pier, let the tide, the current take it away. I leave my bail open, and I'll stop every once in a while, give it a pop, open my bail up if I don't get a hit, let it drift a little 5-10 feet away from the pier again, close my bail. When the line tightens, I jerk the rod and hold your rod tip down. Don't lift your rod tip up when you're trying to pop it. Keep that rod tip down towards the water. You pop it and then let it go out a bit further until you get out where you want. But you cannot cast 4 or 5 feet of line. It's just a nightmare. It's going to tangle when it hits the water. Just drop it down and let the tide take it out.
Well, and plus you're fishing for from a pier, so you have to be very conscientious of the people that are around you so you don't end up snagging one of them with that longer leader because it's so awkward and swinging back and forth.
Yeah, I kind of get the whole swinging thing. Let's drop this in. You're listening to WKDW 97.5 Real Community Radio out of Northport, Florida. If you're in one of the surrounding towns, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. Real Community Radio, WKDW 97.5 FM. But back on to the sea trout thing. That's one fish I love throwing artificials for. And I think today's world, the most common thing is the DOA Cal Shad.
Yep.
That little paddle tail shad with a jig head on it. I'm a little old school, though. I like the tandem lures. I like the old-fashioned love lures did it first, but they're out of business now. So DOA brought out a tandem rig. And what it is it's pre-rigged with two curl tail jigs on it. And you tie your line to it, and when you throw it out, you're throwing two at once. And so one of them is chasing the other one. To me, that, I know, are you a paddle tail guy, or are you into the old-fashioned double tandem rigs?
Those tandem rigs just are so perfect and tried and true. I mean, I honestly, if it was just trout I was targeting, absolutely, I'd probably go with the tandem rig more than anything else.
I think they're pretty good at mackerel, too, because I've used spreader rig on Spanish, so I would say Spanish mackerel, maybe even jacks, but I think paddle tail's probably a little better for jacks. And I was worried about the DOA one when it first came out, because they're very close together.
Yeah.
And if I get a fish on one, and I don't have anything on the second, because quite often you get doubles, I want to make sure that I hold the fish so that other lure is hanging straight down away. I turn the jig and let that other curl tail get away from it. Something about the curl tail versus the paddle tail, I think it's a difference in the tone or the vibration in the water. The sound difference is dramatically different. It's a higher pitch, I believe.
Yeah.
And then with the two of them, one chasing the other one, kind of gives that escape look. But this is, again, one when you cast it out, you're reeling it in at a moderate to faster retrieve, and I'm lifting my rod tip up, lifting it a little bit again, and then letting it drop down, lifting up, letting it drop down. And the object behind it is to make it look like those fish are darting towards, or your lures, like they'd be bait fish, are darting towards the surface and then falling back like... Right. And then darting towards the surface and falling back. That's what gets the fish's attention. Think, what does a thread fin or a whitebait do when they're being chased? Glass minnows do the same thing.
Yes, absolutely.
They try to jump out of the water to escape a predator. Whether pinfish or a shrimp, they're going to go to the bottom and try and hide. But a glass minnow, a whitebait, anything like that is going to go towards the surface, try and jump out of the water, get in a big school of other ones and say, I hope he eats him, not me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, survival of the smartest.
Yeah, I mean, or the luckiest, you know? It's kind of like us people on the internet right now. We're all a school of bait fish. If you don't think your social security number and all your personal information isn't out there floating around, it's true. We're a school of bait fish, and all we're doing is hoping they get the other guy, not us.
Right.
We're living the life of a glass minnow in this world
today.
That's
an awesome thought.
Sorry about that, boys and girls. Didn't mean to go there, but you know, I never know where I'm going to go. I try and stay on topic. Yeah, that's going to happen. Uh-huh. Okay. We're going to come back to a couple of fish here in a minute, but if I'm going out to the pier, I don't mind fishing with two rods. I'll take a rod and put a bait on it, mm-hmm. and cast it out, and I use a live liner bait runner reel, a dual drag.
Right.
One that has a fighting drag and one that has a waiting for the fish drag. Yes. And then when you reel it, it automatically kicks to the fighting drag, because how many rods would you say are stolen by fish during the course of a year down here?
I couldn't even get a number on that.
I would
one.
Say hundreds.
Oh, probably thousands, to be honest with you, if you take it statewide.
Statewide, yeah. Thousands of rods a year go into the water. Because when you're fishing up north and you're on a lake or a pier or something, and you get a bite, the rod bounces around a little bit. But down here you get a hit, and you watch your rod and reel fly literally through the air and push into the water.
Looks
and it's
like somebody
gone.
Just threw a javelin.
Yeah. And you're like, ah, I yeah. just bought that.
Yeah.
So you freaked out.
That's awesome.
So
if I've lost two personally over the years. So
really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a horrible feeling.
Oh, my worst one was I just took home a beautiful rod and reel, and I was in the boat, and I set it down. I was going over to get a sandwich, and I put my foot on it to hold it in place because I didn't have a rod holder on that boat I was in. And when I leaned, I couldn't quite reach the cooler, so I moved, and my foot went up, and all I heard was boom, 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 splash. My rod went over the side. That was back in the 80s, and that was a $200 setup then. And wow. That was a lot of money.
Wow.
But
that
anyway,
hurt.
Yeah, it hurt, because I had to pay for that. So anyway, on the pier, I'll take one rod that I'm going to hold. The second rod I'm going to take, they're about similar rods, but usually the one I'm using for bait, I want a 7.5 or an 8-foot rod on there. I'll cast the bait with a popping cork, free line at bottom, whatever I'm going to do. And then I throw a lure with the other rod.
Yep.
And that's kind of fun because I can keep myself kind of busy throwing the lure, and my bait's still there trying to catch a fish that way. And I'm not one who really has a preference. Are you a bait guy or a lure guy?
Honestly, I'm probably more of a bait guy than a lure guy, but I do like to play with lures while I'm out there fishing for a couple reasons. One, because I know I'm not very good at them, so I'm always trying to learn them and practice them better. Two, I really want to practice with them so I at least know the functions of them, so when I talk to customers about them, I at least have half an idea on what the lure is supposed to do and not supposed to do when used properly.
And that's one of the hard parts about our job, is trying to understand all of the different lures, all the different models, types, and what they do.
Yeah.
And so, while I have a couple lures that I fish with a lot, I'm always taking different lures with me so that when something comes out and somebody asks me a question, I can answer that question about the lure.
Right.
What does it do? Why does it do it? It's part of the fun, and also part of the stuff where it makes this job just a little bit harder. Let's see. And you're listening to WKDW 97.5 FM, Real Community Radio, out of Northport, Florida. I like this station.
Yeah,
I like the people here. I
love the concept.
Yeah, what a great... It's really a great place. Anyway, getting back to it, and you can donate. You can go on the website, kdwradio.com, and you can click the donate and ways to support and all that kind of stuff. Because this is a nonprofit. It's really cool. I don't really know if I'm saying anything right or wrong here, but, you know, my heart's in the right place anyway, just like I believe theirs is. So, if you're going out to the pier, we're talking about one or two rods fishing with it. I think it's rather rude to take out a dozen or 15 rods and just load the whole pier up with your stuff. You're the only one that matters.
Yeah.
and I probably just upset half the pure fishermen in the world out there, but I just, how can, state law says you can have as many rods as you want as long as you're in attendance of those rods.
Right.
It is illegal in Florida to put a rod on the pier, throw the bait out, and leave.
Yep.
You must be in attendance of that rod.
Right.
I just don't see how, and we got to get with FWC and ask them, you know, how do they classify being in attendance of a rod? Because if you got 12 or 15 rods out, how are you actually, if you're landing a fish on one and the other one goes off, what?
Yeah.
You know, and usually by the time you get to it, the fish are gone because you're over here and the one's hitting over there and you lost the fish. If you've got a couple, you can be in attendance of it.
Yes.
And you'll actually catch more fish than if you have a bunch of them out. If you've got one or two rods, and I'm a big Mark Twain person. I love Mark Twain's sayings. And he said, put all your eggs in one basket and watch that basket.
Yep, absolutely.
And I think that's a good thing to get into with fishing. That's a good way to go. And it's a little rude to take up the whole pier.
It's not a little rude. It's completely rude and inconsiderate.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. One of the things about, let's say we've caught a fish, you know what I mean, and you've hooked a fish. How do you get it up?
The right easiest way, but not the most convenient for taking out on the pier, honestly, is a bridge net.
Okay, what's a bridge net?
A bridge net basically is a round steel hoop with three ropes coming up to a point on the top where you attach a main rope to, and you hang it down in the water so it's laying horizontal to the water, and you slide the fish over into it like a basket, basically, and then you lift up the net straight up to you, and it's great for tiny fish or large fish.
Okay, why wouldn't you just use a landing net?
Because most landing nets don't reach down to the water that far.
That's funny, because a lot of people, they say, well, I want a long-handled net because I'm going to the pier. Well, how far is the pier up off the water?
Right.
6 foot?
So minimum.
Minimum, like a bay shore, is probably 5 or 6 foot.
Right.
But if you would have to, with a 6 foot net, lay on your belly to reach down to the water to get a fish out.
Don't forget,
if you had a 6 foot
handle. Don't forget you
had
to climb over the railing.
Well, even if
and then lay down.
Even if you just kind of laid between the railing or something.
Right.
But if you have a bridge net, what it is this metal ring with a net below it, and it's on a rope. And these ropes are 40, 50 feet long. So what we do is, before we've caught a fish, when we first get out there, we drop the net in the water, getting it about a foot, foot and a half below the surface of the water, tie it off so it's tied into place. And then when you catch a fish, you can just walk it over the top of the net and then just pick up on the net, right?
Right.
So if you bring it up and you're going to get the hook out of it and everything, do you just pitch them over the railing and say, fly, fishy, if you don't want to keep them?
No. No. First of all, what I do...
Fly, fishy!
First what I do is actually lift them up, and I actually lay the whole net right on the deck with the fish still inside the net. Because the net is wet, and it at least is going to wet down the plywood decking of the pier. So I'm going to do less damage to the fish as far as removing his protective slime coating on a totally dry wooden dock. Especially if I'm going to release him.
Good point.
You know, so it's just much easier for that release purpose of the animal. And then when I go to release him, I'm going to just lift the net up with him still in it and send it back down. Let it hang in the water, and that fish is going to swim right out of there without any issues.
You know what I think we ought to try and see if we can make a little hook to make the net flat, and then just once you've released the fish, so that the fish isn't in a pocket, a net pocket, where it's just kind of more flat so that you can get it down to the water and set it there and let the fish swim off of it. I don't know if they'd actually find their way out of the pocket, do they?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Sometimes you actually have to kind of wiggle it or shake it or whatever to get that fish to move around and get them out of there.
I think if we just, you know, like one of those shower clips and put it on the net into the ring to hold it across so it has a little bit of a belly to it, but the fish is kind of laying right on the top of it, let it down in the water, and the fish could just swim off.
There you go.
But I do like your point about the dry, because one of the things that people don't understand is humans have what's called an epidermal layer. And that epidermal layer on your skin is what keeps you from getting infections. Yep. When you get a cut, the cut gets infected because you broke the epidermal layer.
Yep.
And on a fish, the epidermal layer is the slime. So if you grab a fish, take the hook out, put the fish back in the water, and your hand is full of slime, 50-50 shot that fish is going to live. Yeah. If you simply wet your hands before you grab the fish, you have little or no slime on your hands when you release the fish. Dry hand, dry rag, dry gloves kill fish. Dry nets. Anything dry takes that epidermal layer off, or slime coating, however you want to say it. Shouldn't equate human stuff to fish, but it's
the easiest way to describe it, though.
But so you want to be cautious about that. That was a great point, allowing the deck of the pier to be wet. That way the dry wood does not suck the slime off the fish, and the fish can be released, not get infections or sores, and it's a much better way to go.
And it's funny because I see guys get mad about that. They're like, you know, when they catch fish, like we're talking about other ways to release them. You know, a guy catches a short snook, for example. Oh, darn it, he's too short. Well, he'll be longer next year, and then they just throw it off like it's a football or whatever off the pier, and it goes down and does a belly flop, and it's like, maybe he's not going to be around next year because you just destroyed that fish, you know, with that belly flop 8-10 feet, in some instances 25 feet above the water.
Right. If you're 6 feet
done
tall,
internal damage to that fish.
Yeah. It's not good.
No.
We got the one thing about it, whether it's bait or fish, you got to handle them properly. Now, I'm going to go back for a minute, and black drum off the pier is a little bit different, almost like sheephead fishing, except I don't want to be up at all. Not, you know, with the sheephead, I want to be a foot up and then maybe a foot or two above that with my hooks. With black drum, I want to be right down on the bottom when I'm fishing for them.
Right.
And I want to get as close to the piling as possible. They seem like they go around those pilings maybe looking for crabs or trying to find stuff, or I don't know, but they seem to be fairly structure oriented. They want to be right down the pilings, but they're going to go right along the bottom and get them.
Yeah, they very seldom are going up and down the pilings. They tend to stick right on the bottom bases of the pilings looking for whatever they're doing. Plus, they're such a large bodied fish, I think they like to hover around towards the bottom because it creates a little current, you know, little eddy currents to takes the relief of the main current off of them.
All right. The other thing is they have chin whiskers, just like me and you nowadays. You know,
right.
You're doing chin whiskers.
Right.
The only difference is they can taste through those. They actually smell and taste with their whiskers. So as they're going along the bottom, they're literally tasting the bottom, and God, I feel bad for them because I know a couple of these piers.
The bottom of that harbor probably tastes pretty rough.
Back in the 80s, I developed a technique for throwing a cast net just so I would not have to put it in my mouth anymore, because I believe at one point I could tell where I was in the harbor just by the way the bottom tastes, because I'd had a net in my mouth so many times from throwing a cast net.
Right.
But so anyway, getting that. But black drum go along the bottom, and they're smelling, tasting with those whiskers. They love eating crabs, and they actually can crush a blue crab in their mouth.
Oh, yeah. They've got that big crusher plate in the back of their throat that just literally flattens a blue crab. I don't care how big the blue crab is. It will flat out crush it like a sledgehammer.
So would you say, I'm going to fish a little bit heavier. Now, these are 40, 60-pound fish. So I'm going to be using like 20-pound-plus monofilament. I'm going to be using 40, 50-pound braid. And what size leader would you be using for those?
Honestly, I'm going to probably stick with that 40 to 60-pound range for a leader.
Okay.
Something with a little bit of size to it.
And I'm using a pretty good sinker. Now, yeah. I use a regular slip sinker rig for this. I don't know if anybody's using something different. But I put my sinker up on the line, anywhere from 3 to 4 ounces of lead, 2 ounces of lead, whatever I figure is going to keep me on the bottom. Tie my line to the swivel so my sinker slides up and down the line easily and is not trapped in place. And then from my swivel, which holds the sinker away from my hook, I do about a 2 to 3 foot leader, and I'm using a 5-aught to 7-aught hook depending on the size of bait.
That sounds about right.
and I'm going to put a piece of crab on there, or I'll put two or three shrimp tails on there, something to make a pretty good presence for that black drum.
Yeah. Well, and also because of all the other little stuff that's down there, like little pinfish, it'll be pecking at it. It stays on longer.
So, anyway, now, going on black drum, a lot of fun, very, very powerful, but it's really weird. I've caught 60-pound black drum on 8-10-pound test monofilament and landed them with almost, I mean, just without being a little problem. Bit of patient, but they came up, and I was able to land them and let them go. And I've kept them eat because I love the taste, the texture of the bigger drum. I think they're, most people like the smaller ones. I happen to like the bigger ones. But I've also had them come up, hit that 50-pound mono, and come up by the surface and slam their head and snap that 50-pound test like it wasn't even there.
Yeah.
Just whoosh, yep. And it was gone. So you never know when you got a black drum. I've caught them on pretty much every size line kind of rod you can think of, but I'm always thinking, is this the upset one? And so we're going to run out of time here. I want to get to snook. Now, snook fishing is probably the ultimate pier fishing fish. You can catch tarpon and sharks and all that, but for snook, live under piers, under docks. You don't cast away from a dock or a pier because the snook is literally under your feet.
Yes. Very, very structure oriented.
And one of the problems is with a snook, they have that black line down the side of them. Every scale on that black line is technically an eardrum. If you ever catch a snook and you get a scale off the belly or the back and then one off that black line, look close, because the one on the belly or anywhere besides the black line is a solid scale.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone that touches the black line has a little tiny hole in it, and that hole's actually attached to a little sack of oil that acts like an eardrum.
Yep.
And so that fish can tune in on any vibration, any noise, and it makes them a very worthy adversary.
Very effective hunter.
So now they can see really good. They also have a great sense of smell. I would equate them to at least a golden retriever or a Labrador for the way they can smell. They smell stuff in the water that's unbelievably cute sense of smell. And they have great eyesight, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Big eyes, and they got great eyesight. I think the most annoying thing about a snook is you're sitting there looking at them, and I've literally stood over them, dropping a shrimp on a hook. I've got my rod and freelining a shrimp, and bounced it on a snook's nose and had him look at me like, what, I'm stupid?
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I'm not going to bite that.
Take that hook off and drop that thing back down in front of me.
Yeah, I mean, they really kind of very annoying fish in some things.
Yeah.
So how do you fish for snook if you're on a pier? What's your way to do it?
Honestly, one of my more favorite ways is the way you taught me, was trolling the pier.
Okay.
Basically, I use an 8-foot long rod. This is my more favorite one, a little bit stouter. I am usually using like 15 to 25 pound mono, and I'm usually using a 40 pound leader because of the abrasion resistance to the pilings, but also the fish's gill plates and his mouth. Even though they have no teeth, they shake their head so violently that they chafe line really quickly.
They have a mouth like a wood rasp.
Yeah. So I'll just cast out, and I'm fishing up current of the pier. And I'll cast out just a little ways, and I'm just walking a lure, a small lipped lure, like a Rapala X-Rap or a Bomber.
Like an XR-10 or a 15 Bomber.
Yep, those are my two favorites. And I just hold my rod straight out from the pier, and just slowly walk along and let the current pull that lure towards the pier.
Okay, I'm going to say I'm not sure slowly is the right word, because depending on the current, you might have to walk a little slower or a little faster.
Well,
because
yeah,
you want
true.
The lure to work in the water, and you want it to dive under, the lip should take it down, it should swim along, but it has to stay away from the pilings.
Right.
But now keep in mind, you've cast out 10 or 15 feet and you're walking along, and you got to adjust your speed to keep that lure just a little bit off the pilings, and you're holding your rod out. You're the boat and you're doing the trolling.
Yep.
So you vary your speed according to the current, and you walk along, give your rod a little jerks a little bit just to make the lure do a little bit, add a little noise. But when you get your hit, the hard part is you can't stay there.
No.
You get your hit. You have to run back to where the lure is reeling because there could be...
As fast as you can.
Oh, yeah. You got to run and look like a maniac where you're reeling and running back to the fish. And if you're not willing to run back to the fish, you're never going to land one.
No, not at all.
You've got one, two, three sets of pilings between where you are and where the lure is. And a snook is an ambush feeder. Is that
yes.
a fair assessment?
Absolutely.
So he's going to lay behind the piling in the eddy, not wanting to be in the current, but laying behind there, waiting for bait to go by him. Run it, he's going to swim out, grab that bait, and then try to get back to where he was to go back and lay up. Well, that act, that natural movement of coming out, grabbing the bait, and then wanting to go back behind the piling, that makes it very difficult to land a snook from a piling because he naturally wants to wrap that piling.
Yep, absolutely. He's going to take you right around the curve of that piling and more than likely break you off.
Because everything in saltwater is barnacles, oysters, all razor sharp. It's all hard. It's going to cut leader. It's going to cut line. It's going to cut braid. It's going to cut everything. So you got to, as soon as you feel the bump, you set the hook and you run, reeling as fast as you can back to get over the fish so that you're pulling that fish straight out from the water.
From the opening between the pilings.
Because you don't want him to get around one of the pilings. And it makes it very interesting.
Oh, it's fun.
Now,
it'll challenge you.
You can, I think, I like something and it's almost identical but different. Same thing, only different. Now, what I like to do is take a shrimp for a walk.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll take a 7-foot rod, even, and 10 to 20 or 12 to 20, and it with 20-pound test braided or 15-pound test mono or higher, I put a jig head on. Now, I like the pink or chartreuse jig heads the best, and I want 3/8, 1/2 ounce. I want a heavy jig head because as soon as I get on the pier and I got at least 10 inches of water, I put it over to the side. Now, on the jig head, I put a shrimp. And when I go to put the hook from the jig head into the shrimp, I turn the shrimp over and I kind of put it right through his mouth, bringing the hook out the top of the head, and then I break off the natural horn of the shrimp. Okay. Because that horn will literally deflect the hook because your hook is sitting immediately above the horn. It looks just like it, only it's right above it. But if that horn's there, I've had that horn where it's been blunted from the force of the fish and the fish came off. Because I couldn't get the hook in the fish because of that horn in the way. So I go with a sideways motion, snap the horn off. Now I've got that shrimp trailing out behind the jig head. I put the jig in the water. I've got about two or three feet of fluorocarbon or mono leader, depending if the water's real clear enough. If the water's real clear, I'll use fluorocarbon. If it's muddier, I'll just use mono. And then I take my rod and I open the bail, drop it to the bottom, close my bail, tighten the line, then I lift my rod tip about 6 inches.
Right.
Now that tells me I'm about 6 inches off the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And I start walking along. And if you're on a wooden pier, it's actually easier. But you have to wear tennis shoes, soft-soled shoes, deck shoes, no cowboy boots, no flip-flops, nothing that's going to make noise as you walk along. And I walk along very slowly, stepping on each board. If you're on a concrete pier, half steps. Put your other foot so that the indent between your heel and the main part of your foot goes on the toe of the next one. Little half steps, very quiet, walking along, bouncing your jig. About every 10, 15 feet, open your bail, let it drop to the bottom again, close the bail, tighten the line, lift your rod tip up about 6 inches. You're going to walk along doing this, and every once in a while just bounce that shrimp and jig head up and down, keeping it within a foot of the pilings. You want to be at least within a foot. If you're not, you're not going to see these fish. And you're going to walk down. If you come up somebody fishing 10 or 15 feet before them, take your bait out of the water, walk quietly around them, and just start in 10 or 15 feet after them. You know, they have their space, they have their right. Just because you're walking a shrimp down the pier doesn't give you a right to butt into somebody else's little private thing. You go out one end, and then you go around, you come back down the other side, go all the way around the end of the pier, avoiding other people, and then walk back down the other side, and then do it again.
Now, are you fishing both sides of the current of the pier?
I always start off on the high side. I can tell you, I honestly always start on the right side, whether the current's coming that way or not, because I'm going to go to the other side anyway.
Right.
But snook, 90% of the time, are going to be looking to the current, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Because every wild animal wants to smell what's coming. They like going into the wind so they can smell what's ahead of them.
Whether it's a prey or another predator.
So it gives them an idea of what they're going into. And a snook's the same way. But sometimes I get them to turn around and come hit the other side.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's because I'm right-handed. So I go to the right side of the pier first. I'm holding the rod in my right hand.
Right.
So if I went to the left side, I would have to hold the rod in my left hand. And that's more uncomfortable for me. So I always start with the right side. I walk out, go around the end, and I'm going to walk back down the other side. But I get to hold my rod in my power hand. So I'm always doing it on the right side. And then eventually I get to the left. But if the current's coming left to right, I'm much more likely to get that hit on the left side, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And the other funny part is, like you talked about, you put it in when you're in the first 10 inches of water. It's amazing how many snook you catch within that first 20 feet of the pier. You know, right at the beginning of it. I mean, I've caught some of my biggest snook ever literally within 30 feet of the beginning of the pier.
And people forget, snook is a shallow water, especially when they're this size in that slot range. They like shallow water, they like heavy cover, and what more than a pier?
Right,
and
exactly.
You tell people, well, if you want to catch snook, just go to the pier. That's where they're going to be. It's kind of amazing. They think they got to take a boat to go out and snook fish, and it's actually some of the biggest ones I've ever caught have been off seawalls or piers. And you can do the same thing walking down a seawall. A boardwalk, anything.
Even the beach.
Even the beach. Now, when I'm fishing snook on the beach, I do a little different. We're going to do a whole show about that. But for me, it's a little different. But basically the same. But off the pier, a little bit heavier tackle than normal. And when I'm snook fishing, I want a pretty heavy action rod because if I'm walking a shrimp and I get a hit, this is not a... what would you call
finesse
it?
Finesse type
fish. Finesse, yeah. You're not trying to tire the fish to bring him in. The whole fight happens if he goes 3 feet this way, 3 feet that way, wraps a piling.
Yep.
You've got to hold that fish there. You lock your drags up. You pull, the fish pulls, whoever pulls the hardest wins.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about. I mean, I've stood on a pier that was 6 feet off the water with a snook on and been soaking wet from the water coming up over the railing and splashing just during the fight.
Yep.
I mean, that's what happens when you snook fish off a pier. It's actually really cool. But you can do these techniques at El Jabin, Tom Adams Bridge at the Anger Pier,
Placida.
Lashley, Placida. If you can actually, if you're on a bridge, like if there's a walkway along a bridge, you can drop your line in one side, use a lot heavier tackle, and hold it and just walk across the bridge,
right,
doing the exact same thing.
Absolutely.
I mean, it really works almost anywhere. Oh, we got about a little over 2 minutes left. I'm not, it's so hard. We actually pre-recorded this show because weren't able to make it into the studio today, so just to let you know, we're not actually here today. It's kind of that out-of-body experience, you know, the fishing zone thing. So, Fish and Frank here and Robert, and both of us have been and still are somewhat avid pier fishermen.
Oh, yes, I do a majority of my fishing from the pier.
And you like the seawalls and the piers. That's mostly where you do your stuff.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes along... I just think it's one of the coolest things to be able to do. Just take a little bit of time off from the world, go out to a pier, relax, have a good time, and you don't have to put the boat in, you don't have to get everything all ready. You can literally put a two-piece rod behind the seat of your vehicle, have it rigged and ready to go with like a lure on it.
Yeah.
And you're driving along and, oh, look at that. Get out, park, walk out, and just make a few casts. Now, if I'm going to cast, I'm going to try and get this in real quick, with a lure, I'm going to walk out, and as soon as I got water, I'm going to go over the right side of the railing, I'm going to cast right along the railing, bringing my lure back to me as close to the pilings as can, and then I'm going to walk a couple, 10 feet further, cast three times, then walk a few feet further, cast three more times, and I'm going to do that all the way around the pier, because the snook are under the pier.
Yeah.
I'll make a few casts out and away, but not as much as underneath the pier. That's where I really like to be. But anything you want to wrap up with, Robert? We got about 30 seconds.
You can reach us at fishandfranks.com. It's real easy.
Yep. My email is frank@fishandfranks.com. No G in Southern Fishing. And this has been Fish and Frank, and that's Robert in the chair across from me, kind of getting in about pure fishing and the different stuff. Man, do we really appreciate you listening right here on 97.5 FM, WKDW, Real Community Radio for Northport, Port Charlotte, Englewood, Venice, and parts unknown in the whole world on the internet. We'll catch you guys on the next Fishing Zone with Fish and Frank's Robert and Fish and Frank. Thanks for listening, guys.